the history of Nintendo. From Nester to NES,
and Luigi
to Wario. Soon to be taught in schools all over Tokyo. To solve the mysteries of Nintendo. This was the history of Nintendo.
Hello, and welcome to the Negative World Podcast, the podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at NegativeWorld.org. This is episode 55, and we're recording on Saturday, November 2nd, 2013. I'm your host, Steven, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Joe.
Hello.
And today is an extended interview with Triforce Bun.
Hi, everyone.
By the time this is coming out, he's going to have a Kickstarter established for a game he's working on. And so I wanted to have him on to tell us about the Kickstarter, about the game, and also about his well-known webcomic, Brawl in the Family.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate you giving us your time. So so I guess, you know, without further ado, we should just jump right in and make the most of our time here. So, Matthew.
Yes.
Let's start with some basic kind of get-to-know-you questions. What do you do for a living? And where are you from?
Well, I've been living here in Louisiana, a small town called Gonzales, kind of close to Baton Rouge, my whole life. And I'm actually a church pianist. I play at a few different masses on the weekends. And during the week, I do funerals and weddings.
Sounds like a bipolar job.
Yeah, really, really joyous occasions and some really sad ones. You know? So it's kind of a lot of mix of that. But you know, it's something I enjoy doing, and it doesn't really feel too much like work to me, you know.
Right, and that's so, actually the best kind of job you can get.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, it's nothing. It's not like a full salary job or anything, but I kind of do that along with Brawl in the Family. So usually during the weekdays, I'll be working on art, and on the weekends, I'll just be you know, playing piano.
Right, right.
Kind of a combination of two of my passions, you know?
Yeah, if anyone has seen your work, they can tell that there's a lot of effort that goes into it. So it's not like you just draw those things up in 2 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
I don't doubt that you spend a lot of time in your week on them.
They used to be a lot quicker back when I started.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure if you go back, just like any, like The Simpsons or Family Guy, you go back to those old episodes and they're so much more basic.
And now I'm really looking.
Yeah. So, also, I wanted to ask a possibly very deep question, but why are you a Nintendo fan?
Oh, man. Okay, let me give the abridged version. I guess, basically, I think what started it was actually just kind of the situation I grew up in. We had an NES when I was about 3, and I was just mesmerized by the worlds and the characters in games like Super Mario Brothers and the original Legend of Zelda. And they kind of became this obsession to me. Like, I was definitely a Nintendo kid. You know, I would draw in like first grade class and stuff. I would draw Mario, and I would draw like these maps for like, you know, sequels, you know, like Super Mario Universe, you know, where Bowser rides a T-Rex, you know, and there'd be like maps of these new levels and things, you know, and they're all really stupid because, you know, I was a kid, but it's kind of this whole lifelong, admiration of mine of these worlds and characters. And, you know, as I got older, Nintendo, I think, still has maintained that quality for the most part, in their games. And it's always something really magical to, you know, to play the latest and greatest, games in their series.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate that your Brawl in the Family comic uses so much of that lore and, you know, characterization, all that stuff from Nintendo. Because as a fan just like you, who you know, it goes deep to the core, long time, you know, started, it's really entertaining to check out your work.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a big part of that is because I feel that I don't think the comic would be the same if I didn't really, really like Nintendo, you know? Like, sure. if I just kind of like Nintendo and it was still about Nintendo, I think it would be a lot more sardonic and kind of negative towards, you know, some of Nintendo's, like, business practices and things like that. But I've always kind of wanted to make it more about the characters themselves rather than like the company, in terms of like, you know, having an executive in a room and he's like, I got this great idea, let's make the 3DS only 2D, and you know, and like, yeah. I don't know, making a joke out of that, for instance, rather than just having the characters themselves interact with each other.
What was the decision to? It seems like you kind of focused your universe around like Kirby and like the Kirby characters, at least, at least to some extent, at least initially. Yeah. What is it? Was he always like your? Were those your favorite games, or like you know, it's an interesting choice to start there instead of the cliche, you know, Mushroom Kingdom.
I think part of that is, I mean, I like the Kirby series a lot. I think some people are mistaken that they think it's my favorite of Nintendo series. And I mean, I really like it, but I don't know if I'd put any of the games in like my top 10 games of all time or anything like that. With Kirby, I think it started because like when Brawl in the Family started, I didn't necessarily set out to make a webcomic. I was just kind of, it started with me just drawing these Kirby characters in really silly situations. And I think part of that was a combination of, I just think Kirby is kind of funny looking and like DDD is kind of weird looking. And I don't know. I just thought of these jokes about Kirby, Kirby's eating mechanic going wrong in some way or another.
He's one of the more expressive or capable of being expressive characters.
Yeah. I mean, he's really expressive and he's also really like simple to draw. So I just came up with these, a few ideas involving Kirby and King DDD and Meta Knight. And those are like the first 10 comics or so. And when I put them up, people really liked them. So I guess as I've made more and more comics, the core has kind of always been about Kirby because I think that kind of grounds it a little bit. Like, it makes there be a sort of, center to the comic instead of just, you know, one-off gags. There's sort of a main character at least. And, it became Kirby because it started with Kirby basically. So, so yeah, he kind of formed the core of Brawl in the Family, I guess.
And so you've been doing this for a long time. When exactly did you start doing this comic?
It actually,
I mean, you've hit almost, if not like what, 500 comics now?
Yeah, it's over 500 comics. It actually started, a little bit about a year before it actually went on the computer. The sketches themselves were probably sometime in 2007. And then, I started the webcomic, site itself at, April 2008. May 2008, I think, was when it started. And, yeah, so it's been running for a little over 5 years, 5.5 years now.
Yeah. So that was, like 2 months after Brawl came out, is it not?
Yeah. It actually is 2 months after Brawl came out. And, the comic wasn't originally based off of Brawl. It just happened to be a convenient way to tie in Nintendo, characters all together. The term Brawl in the Family kind of, I picked that because I like the idea of Nintendo's characters basically being a family, you know?
Yeah.
Of sorts. A makeshift family. That's kind of what it is.
And not to jump ahead to something I was going to bring up later, but your, I think it's your actual number 500, The Prodigal Robot.
Yeah.
That it's kind of an animated video that you did.
Right.
And that's something in recent memory of mine, but I loved it so much because of how you interpreted Mega Man and his family and friends. And it sells so well as far as the concept because of what your comic has been for the last 499 issues. It's really great how after 500 you're still really emphasizing that and it's all staying a cohesive thought throughout.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean that came to mind because I feel like there is a lot of emotion that people have towards these characters in these series. And in the case of Mega Man, you know, it was kind of that feeling that he was becoming more and more irrelevant. And, you know, him being in Smash Brothers was kind of almost a second life for the character. So, you know, I thought that was kind of a nice sentiment to sort of zero in on because, I mean, I'm a Mega Man fan and I felt that way. So, yeah, a lot of the comics are about me sort of expressing a type of emotion related to the characters.
So if that inspires the stories and the situations, what inspires the artistic style?
I think it started off really, really simple. Like I would actually draw worse than I'm kind of capable of when they first started, because I think the humor was a little more oblique. Like it had kind of a droll sort of feeling to it that, as the comic got older, I think the humor got a little bit more, I guess mainstream is the word. I mean, it sounds kind of negative, but it started off, you know, very quirky and very oddball. And I think the art style kind of evolved with that too. I started drawing it more, on model, but you know, still, still trying to have it have its own unique style. So I guess that's kind of always been the way I've drawn for the most part. And the comic's just kind of an extension of that.
Do you feel like the artistic style is constantly developing, or do you think you've kind of hit a plateau? Not in a bad way, but in the sense that you're really content with where things are and you want to stick with this for familiarity and all that?
I try to strike a balance between something that's, you know, good to look at and something that I can still produce without spending, you know, a ton of time on it. But I mean, honestly, I think that's one aspect of the comic that I feel could always be improved is the art style. And it's something that that, you know, I've read a lot about, and I keep trying to improve, and that's something that I feel like, you know, I'm always going to keep adjusting and improving, hopefully, because I'm never quite 100% happy with the way it looks. But related to that, I do like to experiment with different art styles every now and then, depending on the type of comic I'm doing.
It'll be great when your comic reaches N64 level of 3D and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It'll be really nice. It'll be...
It'll be kind of angular for a while, though.
Yeah, it will.
Smooth that things out. But
fun with perspective, I guess.
Yeah.
But great. What hardware and software are you using for this?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, I draw everything in Photoshop using the brush tool. And regarding the line quality itself, I started off on an Intuos tablet, I think it was. One of those drawing pads where we draw directly on the tablet and it appears on screen. And eventually I invested in a Cintiq tablet, which is a separate monitor that you can draw directly on. And what's great about both of those things is that you can your pressure determines the thickness of the line, which really makes a huge difference in terms of the way the line appears. Because I know games like Art Academy and like Miiverse Post and like going further back, PictoChat, they're all really fun to draw on. Like I really like things like that, but they don't have that that element where the pressure determines the thickness of the line. And having that really brings a lot more. It lets you really play around with the line width a lot more and inject some sort of movement into the outlines, which I think is really beneficial.
How do you even in Photoshop using that? Is it just a setting on the brush tool that allows it to not be all pixelated and fuzzy? Because like I've tried drawing in Photoshop before, and I don't know what the right setting is.
You might be using the pencil. There's a pencil and there's a brush, and the pencil has the way it works is it's all either the one color that you picked or it's, you know, not. And so that can kind of have a jagged outline. If you pick the brush naturally fades out towards the edges of the line to where there's kind of these, like if you're drawing a black line, there's like light gray kind of on the edge. And this gives it a much smoother look to it.
Just makes mine look fuzzy. Like yours.
Oh, it just makes yours look fuzzy?
Hmm. Yeah, yours still look, you know, like vivid and like sharp, even though you have clearly the room for those nuances and that, you know, to do those more expressive lines. But I don't know. It's just probably just something
I mean, this was something that I really struggled with for a long time. Like I had to look up, I would look at like something Penny Arcade does or something and be like, how do they make those lines look like that?
Right.
And I think it was really a combination of what I said, you know, playing around with the brushes, trying to find one that works for you. And, also, working big is a big part of it. If you have a larger image, there's more pixels, you know, there's a higher resolution. And so there's kind of more, wiggle room for that gradient.
Okay. Okay. That would make some sense. Cause the only answer I ever get is like, well, just do it vector art.
Just do it.
Takes forever.
I mean, it's tricky. It's really something that does require a lot of practice as well. But those should be good starting points. You know, if you have the right tools for the job and you're working big, I think that's a good place to start.
Cool.
Can you tell us a little bit about how long each comic takes? And also, you kind of touched upon it, but just your general process.
Yeah. The way that usually works with the paneling is I'll sketch it up in a sketchbook first. You know, sketch up the basic idea. And then if, you know, I'll kind of rewrite it from there. Like, I'll come up with a core concept, and then I'll kind of rework it and make sure the dialogue kind of flows and everything's clear. And this is kind of when I sort of determine how everything's staged in terms of the panels. When it comes to putting the panels down, you know, permanently on the image itself on Photoshop, it's pretty simple. You know, I just make a separate panel layer, you know, I call it framing. And then, I don't know if you know how many people know it. This is a pretty simple trick, but it's really effective. If you hold down the shift button while drawing in Photoshop, it'll just make an automatic straight line.
Right.
So I just do that to frame out the panels. I'll make a sketch layer that's just me placing everything, and then I'll outline it with the framing and then with the main outlines themselves. And that's pretty much the process. But the whole thing usually takes about the average comic nowadays probably takes about four or five hours to finish. Color comics take a little bit longer, maybe 7 or 8 hours.
So that's purely drawing. That's not including the conceptual phase and all that, and sketching.
The sketching itself only takes a few minutes because I make it really loose just to kind of get an idea of how it looks. But the conceptual phase can really vary. Like I could come up with something like when I'm not even thinking about a comic idea, and other times I'll struggle for like an hour or so just trying to think of a comic idea and nothing will come up, you know, that I'm satisfied with. And that can be pretty frustrating, but I think on average it takes, you know, about 4 to 5 hours for a standard comic.
All right. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of leads into my next question then. Do you have kind of a, at least maybe at times, do you ever have a bank of ideas that you go to or do you always kind of make the next one up on the fly? A lot of your stuff is very timely, and I really appreciate that too, because looking back, it almost gives you a history of Nintendo. And then as you're viewing them each week or however, you know, you release them, it's almost like a commentary. And so that's very cool. So is each idea out of thin air, or do you kind of build up ideas and then let them loose when you can? Or
I think in webcomics they call that a buffer. And I really like when I have a buffer because, you know, obviously it's a little bit pressure that's a little bit less pressure. But I think usually I try to think of several ideas at once. And sometimes, you know, I'll have a little bit. I'll be a few comics ahead. And more often than not, though, I'm kind of drawing each one pretty much after the previous one has already gone up. So that's a little more stressful, but it's nice whenever I have several that are already ahead. I don't really have a master idea bank though that I can duck to whenever I can't think of anything, which would that'd be nice. But yeah, I'm kind of doing it on the fly for a lot of it.
Okay, I guess I have to ask the most important question of the entire podcast right now, which is there a central timeline to this? Does that exist? I mean, are you going
to
release
a central timeline to Brawl in the Family?
Yeah, because
I think it starts with Cocoon Academy. Actually, no. It starts with Mario's birth, I guess, in that one comic. And then,
see, okay, because I had that kind of in the middle. Like I've been trying to piece it together for years, and
Well, there's a part where it splits. I think whenever Kirby gets huge and then he eats everyone for Halloween, which I just did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's part of the alternate timeline where everyone dies.
Maybe the last one, yeah, will be just Kirby sucking the comic up himself or something. And,
yeah, that'll
and then
be
all
it.
Just ends.
And then it all just ends, and then Waluigi's like, expecting more. Too bad, Waluigi time. And then he'll dance for the rest of the comic. That'll be it. No, I'm not going to end it like that. That'd be terrible.
Well, speaking of Waluigi really quick, the Negative World has had a tradition, not this year, but in past years.
Oh, yes.
Oh, kind of a Waluigi visual in-your-face attack, more or less.
Yeah.
And I'm using safe words as opposed to the much more gruesome description I have in my head.
Oh, okay.
But, but yeah, that bombards on April Fool's and has, that is your drawing of Waluigi, isn't it?
I mean, I had no idea they were going to do that initially. So now, pretty much every April 1st, when I log into Negative World and I see it, it's like, oh yeah, this is going on again, isn't it? And so, yeah, I think it, not only does it change everyone's avatar to Waluigi, but, it adds that, that long wah at the beginning of everyone's post.
Yeah.
So, it's madness. But I can't help but feel partially responsible for that.
Yeah, you're more than partially, I think.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask a question that probably is really obvious to everyone else, but some of the stylistic choices that go into some of your versions of Waluigi.
Oh yeah.
That comes from somewhere else, right?
Comes
Isn't
from
that
somewhere.
Like the like I want to say 4chan or something like that? Like the
The way I draw Waluigi sometimes.
Yeah, like when he's being especially
I know
obnoxious.
what you're saying. Yeah, there's a certain face that's almost a meme, and it's kind of grotesque that you almost Photoshop on anything that you need to. It kind of looks like that. I see what you're saying.
I mean, I'm not.
I think that might be unintentional. Actually, okay. that might be a coincidence.
Okay.
Because I think with Waluigi, it's just it's kind of anything goes. Like, I mean, he showed up because I was drawing the Mario characters in really strange styles one day, and I just really liked the way they ended up looking. So Waluigi ended up being stuck like that.
I'm glad I asked. I think that actually makes your version even cooler then.
Oh, okay. Well, good.
You know, if it's not just a, I thought it was you playing with that other thing, which as I made clear, I'm not even all that familiar with. But
oh, wait, you seem to have linked me to it. Oh, it's like those crazy. Yeah. I know what you're talking about now. But no, I mean, I don't think I've ever. I wasn't intentional or anything.
Gotcha.
I think part of the thing with memes is I try to actually not use memes too much in the comic itself because I feel like they get dated more quickly than a lot of I guess Nintendo games that I reference.
And you know, I appreciate that. I mean, memes can be funny, and maybe I'm just kissing your butt here a little bit, but I think that memes in your comic would almost be like jumping the shark. You know, you do your own thing. You don't have to bring Keyboard Cat and make him Keyboard Bubsy or something like that, or whatever you know you might do. That's the only cat I can think of just now.
Right.
Or Keyboard Mario Cat, as we'll have in a month. Or...
Keyboard Cat Mario, right.
But actually, that might be a brilliant idea.
That was my webcomic.
That was your whole webcomic show?
Yeah, it was just going to be that.
All right.
Keyboard Mario Cat in the family. I hope you don't mind.
Keyboard Mario Cat in the family. Nice. Let's make it happen.
I have one last question, then I'm going to let Joe take the floor. But my last question here, about the comics anyway, the animated comics. I don't know exactly when you started doing them, but I've caught a few of them, and I think they're brilliant. I have a background in film and cinematic arts and just motion pictures, so it's cool to see your still comics kind of go into that world a little bit. And three of them that are more recent is the Prodigal Robot that I mentioned, where Mega Man is kind of experiencing some issues as he gets older. The History of Nintendo was brilliant. The way that you kind of paid homage and did everything as far as the history of Nintendo, even going back to the Love Hotel days, I believe. And that was number 400. Prodigal Robot was 500. And then there was Home, which kind of, I think that was a holiday one for Christmas.
Yeah. It was a series of, there were a series of Christmas comics involving one character in a different character's world, like kind of taking a holiday vacation. So yeah, the theme there was that they all kind of returned home for the holidays, and they kind of brought that all together with the song. But yeah, the animated comics, I think that started with the Grinch one, was the very first one, because I was doing an extended Grinch parody, and I really wanted to do a version of the song. So it was kind of like a musical comic, like it would play when the comic appeared. And I've kind of done those for every 100 comics as well, since 200, I think it was. Ode to Minions. And I mean, those I really like doing because they let me combine my passions of art and video games and music into one thing. So I really like doing them. They take an incredible amount of time to do.
I bet.
By far, they're the longest comics there are in terms of the work that goes into them.
So then, as far as creating those, do you use Adobe Premiere for like a linear editor and then or non-linear editor and then kind of bring in stills, or how do you animate that stuff?
I feel like I'm doing it in a really roundabout way that I feel like there's got to be an easier way to do it, because I'm drawing each one in Photoshop, and then I'm just saving each image separately and then putting it into my wife actually has been helping me lately with the editing, just putting it into Movie Maker. So like whenever there's an animation that's you know, several frames, like Mega Man running and shooting, each one of those frames has to be put into Movie Maker for like 1/10 of a second, you know. So it's a pretty tedious process, but
there might be a program that automates that, but you're just doing it old school. You might as well have you know, one of those giant light boxes and just,
yeah, so I can just flip them, you know. It's like, like Disney animators did.
You know, and that's cool though.
I'd like to do more anime comics in the future, and because of their the work involved, it's probably just going to be every 50 or 100 or so, maybe for Christmas.
But also, that makes them more special. You know, if you were to do one a month, I mean, I guess I'd find that really cool, because I mean, I look forward to those, but it would diminish the special nature of them. So yeah. I don't think people are dying for you to change what you're doing now. I think you've got a good ratio going. Joe is, I mean, I'm a fan, but Joe is like a mega fan compared to me. He's just read a lot more of them. I mean, have you read every single one, Joe?
Yeah.
So, and I haven't. So,
all right. Yeah, it's a lot of reading.
I really want to go back and catch up and everything, but Joe, he's checked out every one. He loves them, and so I wanted to give him the floor for a minute to kind of gush. He's got some of his favorites he wants to discuss.
Well, I'll say first of all, I have under my Firefox bookmarks, I have games and then a comedy subfolder, and in that subfolder is only Penny Arcade. Awkward Zombie. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
Yeah.
And then Brawl in the Family. So.
All right. That's good company being.
Yeah. But I just thought I would take this opportunity and be selfish since I have the opportunity to interview you and walk you down memory lane for some of my favorites, my top three. These are my top three all time. So I'll describe the premise and then we'll see if you can fill in the blank and maybe just tell us how that particular one got created. So
okay, great. Yeah, can you start with number three then? Because I like when top lists go from the bottom to the top.
Okay, all right. I was going to go chronologically, but all right. So let's. Now I have to decide between them.
You can do them chronologically if you want.
I don't know. It's like picking. Well, it would be your babies, I guess. But anyway, all right. So the first one, it stars Yarn Kirby. Oh. And it's when some of the other Nintendo properties start throwing their hand in the material genre.
Oh, yes.
Experimenting.
Paper Mario, right?
Yes. Paper Mario is the first one. Mm-hmm. And where did you take us from there, Matthew?
Let's see. I think then we had Fuzzy Peach was next.
Yep.
And Fuzzy Peach ended up looking like... She looked like those weird things at the carnival that you shoot with water, like the clowns with the hair.
Yeah, actually, that's a very description. Yeah,
it's very fuzzy. And then here comes Chain Link, and then comes Chain Link. Link made out of chains. You know, an interesting thing about that: we had a fan art contest on the Brawl in the Family forums, and someone made a version of that using that concept of Chain Link. They made a chain like Legend of Zelda image. And it was awesome. Like, Link was made out of, like, paper clips and chains and things, and then Ganon was made out of, like, a stapler or something. And it was really cool. It really made me want to play a game like that. So I thought that was really cool, like, how he just expanded on that whole concept.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And Steven has done some research and informs me that was webcomic 285, if people want to go.
Very nice.
Check it out.
I don't know the numbers right off the hand, but yeah, 285 sounds about right.
October 22nd, 2010.
Yep. Okay. Yep. All right, so next, this is, oh man, so good. So this is when Lakitu is faced with a moral dilemma as to whether or not to do his job as it typically appears in Mario Kart.
Oh, yes. This is that single image. The vertical one. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
From
November 9th, 2010.
November 9th, 2010. Yeah, this was... I think this idea started because of... Lakitu in Mario, he's an enemy. And then in Mario Kart, he's forced to help out Mario. So this is just basically that conflict of interest, I guess. And I'm really happy with the way that actually unfolded and that you see Mario doing all these horrible things first. Mm-hmm. And then you scroll down and it's all part of a thought bubble as mm-hmm. Lakitu is looking sort of mischievous, especially his cloud, I think, and Mario mm-hmm. is in the water.
This is my first time seeing this one, number 290. And it is awesome. Yep. I love it. I'm like right now in my head, I'm thinking, would this be a good phone background? But I don't know if the top would be a little busy.
I thought about making it a poster at one point.
That would be cool.
Nice.
It could actually work.
And I don't know if you guys watch Breaking Bad, but it's funny. This is making me think of that show, a certain moment in that show. I won't go into details for spoilers, but it's just funny that this made me think that.
I think I know what you're talking about, and that's a very interesting comparison to draw, but I think I know just what you're talking about.
Maybe it's the glasses on Lack, too.
Yeah, it could be. It could be a Walter White thing. But no, I just...
But absolutely, yeah. I love this comic, and this is exactly what I was trying to say earlier, Matthew, is your comics have so much truth to them. And also they just, I don't even know the best word, they just exude this feeling of not fanboyism in the bad way, but just like you're a true fan. You understand the themes and concepts and all this stuff, and you think about it deeper than just pressing A, pressing B, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's great. And well, I've been playing Nintendo since I was 4 years old, and you know, well over 20 years now, and I totally get this, and I'm so glad someone is out there doing this, because I sure as hell I'm not gonna. I can't if I wanted to. So I appreciate that I'm able to get this content for free, like a selfish bastard.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, that's great. I love that there's other people out there that you know, are Nintendo fans the same way I am, and they enjoy this kind of thing. So I think that's great.
Well, it kind of reminds me of what I always say makes the best mysteries, and it's like the best mystery to me is the one where at the end, like, you never would have figured it out, but you could have. You know, like the clues were there the whole time. And like in some of your comics, the ones that resonate most with me are the ones where it's like with this Lakitu one, where it's like it's so obvious that he should be facing this dilemma based on the way he's been treated before. But I never would have thought of that on my own. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. All right, well, thanks. It's a nice deconstruction of the concept. I like that.
Yeah. So, all right. So the last one is a Pushmo comic,
and Pushmo.
Similarly to the
one and only Pushmo comic, I think.
Yeah. So this is when some other Nintendo characters tried to get in the act, and didn't go over so well. So tell us about how this one came about.
I really liked Pushmo when I played it, and I really wanted to make a Pushmo comic, and I remember struggling with it for a while, because I don't remember exactly. I had an initial idea, and I didn't really like it that much. And then I think, I'm not sure exactly where the idea of Nintendo characters going, you know, trying to do what Mallow does came from in the first place, but I think it might have started with Kirby, you know, being able to fly up there. So I was like, okay, you know, he could fly up there and that'd be kind of a cheat. But is that enough to carry a whole comic? You know, and I thought, okay, well, what if these other characters do it? And then that led to Link, of course. I was like, okay, yep. Link already pushes and pulls blocks, so he could do that. And they're going to have a twist at the end with a hook shot, you know? And that, I guess that's pretty much where I came from. And I had fun also making Samus's panel because like that little extra energy tank that just happens to be under there.
Which is just sitting under the push mill level, of course.
Yeah.
This was
she knows how to find him.
This was one of my first ones that I saw, and it's nice seeing it again because the punchline's brilliant. As a huge fan of Pushmo and all these franchises, not so much Kirby. But here's what's great about your comic. I'm not big into the Kirby games. Everybody knows this. I'm pretty vocal about it. But I like the character a lot. So you're allowing me to enjoy the character without actually having to play the games.
All right.
So no offense to Nintendo.
It's quite a privilege, all right.
And like, I feel like a second tier webcomic would have stopped at that second to last panel. You know, like if I was trying to make this, I probably would have stopped that second to last panel and been like, this is funny, because Link pushes stuff. Yeah. But it's that last one. Oh, man.
So I'm glad you like that last panel, because a lot of the times I'll make a comic and the people on, you know, I'll get feedback where it's like, oh, you should have just ended it here, you know. Too many. It's funny because it feels like the last panel is automatically funnier than the ones before it, and the ones before it, regardless of how funny they are, aren't as funny as they could be if the comic ended with that panel. So it sounds really strange, but it's almost like if you find something funny before the end, you sort of hold in your laughter a little bit, and it's a really weird phenomenon. But that's kind of what I've observed. So now it's a really tricky balancing act to make sure the funniest part is at the very end of the comic.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's pretty weird.
You nailed it with this one, I think. So,
right. Well, thanks.
I don't know. I mean, he probably should have went one more panel.
One more panel.
Just so we could see her get impaled with a hook shot. This is for those who want
to. The trick to making it family friendly is always to end it before something horrible happens. You know, you can have the implication of brutality, but as long as you get it before then, you're okay.
Well, all the best, you know, writers and directors and stuff, they know how to hold back and how to make the audience be the one to fill in the blanks, and that's really what brings the most fear, the most emotion out of them, is because they bring their own emotion to the table. So looking at Link almost impaling somebody with his hookshot is both hilarious, but also a great place to end because of that. We can kind of infer, and we each have our own different reaction. You're not defining the reaction we have to your comic by forcing that last panel.
Well, and I just love the earnest look on Link's face. So he's just what? This is how I would solve it.
Yeah, I mean, he's not malicious, you know. It's just, right. It's the way he does things.
What's the problem? But that at that point, is his name just Grandpa or something? What's that?
I think they just call him Grandpa.
Yeah, okay. But at that point, his patience is over for these crazy other Nintendo.
When worlds collide, this is like the greatest asset to Brawl in the Family is just going back to that well, because there's just a lot you can do with that.
Mm-hmm. So, Steven informs me this is installment 391.
Yep.
If people want to go check it out, January and I could 16th. Probably go on for dozens of these, but those are I tried to pick a top three, and that's what I settled on.
Before the next podcast, Joe, you put them all in order for us, and we'll just announce them on the air. All 500
all
plus.
All 500 plus.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God.
No, we'll dedicate that time to you. And then I'll go through the trouble of making chapter markers in the Enhanced podcast for each one.
Oh, boy.
yeah, that won't happen. So we should probably change gears. I want to give you enough time to talk about your other project. But last question I got to ask. I don't know even what the legal capabilities are of this, but would there ever be a book?
Brawl in the Family book?
Yeah, because I would love like a coffee table type book of all these comics.
I think there would possibly be one.
Oh.
Hmm. Do I have to go back and edit this out for your sake?
No. There is a book. That's the great news.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it already out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's out.
So, let's see. If I look at your store, it's awesome. Says, BITF books.
Look at that.
Volume 1 hardcover. Holy moly.
That's right, man. It is the Brawl in the Family coffee table book. I have answered your wish.
Wow.
Just like that.
It's amazing that, you know, either I was so oblivious or you just happened to go back in time just to resolve this for me that quickly.
I think it's that one because I didn't know either.
The site is a little funky right now, but if you click on the story, you can see inside the book.
Yeah, I'm totally looking at it right now.
So
volume one, just to kind of clue us in, you have...
The first 200 comics, that includes the initial Waluigi comics, so it's actually more than that, it's like 230-something comics. And it also includes all sorts of bonus stuff, because I'm of the opinion that the comics are already online, so I want to add extra stuff to the book to make it really worth getting. So there's like a whole making of section, there's like a 10-page like short story beforehand that involves Kirby. There's like a characters section. There's special thanks. There's like there's some other stuff. It's like 200 pages. It's pretty good. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, fantastic. And you can get it in hardcover or paperback.
Yep.
And for something like this, I'd probably want it in hardcover, frankly.
Yep.
This is awesome. And then so this is the first 200. You're already at 500. When's volume 2 coming out?
That,
or is it already out? And this is
it's not out yet. Oh. That I'm still kind of trying to figure out the timeline, because that's a little bit tricky with the number of books and the effort. Like, I actually made a Kickstarter for the Brawl in the Family Volume 1 book, and that's why I was able to put so much into it. With another book, I don't know if I can do another Kickstarter for the book, but if I did, I'd have to do it a little bit further away from Tadpole Treble. And so it's something I'm still kind of bouncing around.
What a tease. You're going to make us wait, you know?
Yeah,
maybe you'll release 2 and 3 together then when you've hit 600.
I'm considering doing that.
But, you got to do what you got to do.
I go to the comic, I click through the comics, and I laugh, and then I leave. But
I don't know if I need to make it more obvious or something.
This hardcover version's going on my Christmas list, I think. This is pretty awesome.
Christmas gift.
Sweet. I'm learning.
Yeah, cool.
We're all learning.
Well, you guys should go, you know, go pick the book up. I'm just looking at the current price it's at right now. My geeky self calculated that it's 22 cents per comic.
Yeah, that's not bad.
For the hardcover. So if you get the paperback, it's even cheaper. And how can you argue with 22 cents per comic? I'm sure many people would pay more just to view them online if they could. Not to give you ideas. I think a lot of us like the free updates. But yeah,
20 cents for the final pain.
Yeah, and you're wondering about the whole legal ramifications. That's a question I get asked a lot. Brawl in the Family actually falls under parody because it is not affiliated with Nintendo, and it's not something that can be confused as an official Nintendo product.
Right.
And that's the same reason why you have comics like Penny Arcade that can sell books as well. Awkward Zombie, I think, also sold a book. And, you know, they have characters in them, but it's not official art that, you know, they're not using official art from the games, same as me, you know, it's all hand-drawn. And it's not something that can be confused for the original work. So that's the way that works for anyone that's confused about it. But that's something I had to look into for quite a while just to make sure everything was okay. And for selling stuff on the store, I actually contacted Nintendo when the store first opened that.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, so yeah, nothing shady here, so that's good to know.
That's good for you, because I feel like, you know, had I been doing this, I would, you know, I would have looked up the legality and then kind of just like sent it out there and hoped. But that's good for you to actually contact them. And so I'm assuming they just said it was okay, right? Because
they sort of gave a kind of a non-committal answer, but it was pretty much that, you know. It's kind of hard to describe, but
right.
But they responded like, "I dare you," and that's it.
Come on, click. Try. I just got a picture of Reggie's face all close up. That's all they sent. No. It was fine. I feel they were cool with it.
Cool. Sweet. All right, well, let's move forward then, because I want to get to this, absolutely. This is actually the main reason we had you on. We just love your comics so much, we had to gush.
Oh, thanks.
The Kickstarter. So, again, technically, let's pretend this is in the future, and people are listening to it right now, and the Kickstarter's out, so it'll be kind of weird to ask you questions that are kind of in the past, but whatever. Tell us about your game, because, I mean, the basis is that you're working on a game, and you're doing a Kickstarter for it because you want to be able to actually do the game justice. Right. And so tell us what it's called. Tell us the general kind of facts about the game, and and then let us know what inspired it in the first place.
Okay. The game is called Tadpole Treble, T-R-E-B-L-E. And the concept is, it started, you know, I've had this concept for actually a really long time, like around 10 years or so. I've always wanted to make a game like this. And it was inspired by my dad, who's a musician as well, playing in Finale, which is a music program. And, you know, the notes would go by, he would write music and he would play it back. And as the notes go by, you know, you hear them play as this line kind of crosses them. And I thought, you know, it made the music really sort of stand out to me. Like you really were paying attention to the notes and you could really get a new appreciation for the music. And being a video game fan, you know, a huge one, I thought, wouldn't it be cool if there was a game where the notes, you know, going by determined the music, like the level itself. So in other words, they were obstacles and you had to dodge them. And that kind of led to the idea of controlling a tadpole. So the concept of the game is you play as Baton, who's a newborn tadpole, and you're swimming through these different levels trying to make your way home. And as you're swimming through the levels, the notes come by, and you know, if the music goes do 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 do, you know, the obstacles will do that too. So depending on how intense the music is, that determines how difficult the level is, basically.
Does the name come from your proximity to Baton Rouge at all?
That was part of the reason I picked Baton. The other part was because all the creatures in this game have some sort of musical name. And I thought Baton was really fitting because, she's basically kind of controlling the music in a way, you know? And I think tadpoles are also shaped like batons a little bit.
I get
So it's kind of three reasons. It's the Baton Rouge and the other two reasons, music.
Sweet.
That's a great observation, Joe.
Yeah, good catch.
So is there going to be a story, or is there a story here really? Or is it?
Yeah, the core concept is actually you're it's kind of an arcadey game at heart, in that you're going for high scores, you're trying to make your way through these stages, and it's sort of a simple story in that you're trying to make your way home, but things keep cropping up, bad things keep happening, and one level she might fall off a waterfall and be stuck in a jungle, and another level she might actually be eaten by an eel and have to go through its belly, which coincidentally has notes in it. And one of the things I really want to do with this game is between each level to tell the simple story is have these comic scenes that would, if you think about games like Undone and Lead Beat Agents, how they have those actual comics. They unveil in comic form. I think that's a really good way to present a little more character of the game without having to, have like CGI cutscenes and voice acting and stuff. It's something that's really in my realm of familiarity for obvious reasons.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm mentally envisioning like Ninja Gaiden-esque cutscenes, but that'd be doing a disservice because obviously you have a lot of history and background doing comics, which the cutscenes could totally fit into that. That's great.
Right.
Who is doing the music for this? Before I even ask that, who else is working on this with you? Anyone?
Right now, it's my brother and I who are really trying to push the game as far as it can go. And we've got a programmer with us as well who's worked on several things in the past. He's worked on, I think, some Xbox 360 games and a lot of mobile games. And he really knows what he's doing, which is good because... like programming is really foreign to me, and my brother's kind of coming around on it, but we really need this extra programmer to help us, get the skeleton of the game running.
Sure.
As for the music, I'm actually doing the music, because music is one of my passions, and anyone who's listened to the comics and Brawl in the Family knows that I really like doing the musical comics, and it's just a really fun challenge to write a song that. Not only is catchy, but it fits the level's theme, and it also doubles as the level design. You know what I mean? Like, if I could have a song that has a cool melody, but it'd be really easy to swim past,
Right. Good point.
So I have to kind of think about, how these harmonies can work and what path the player can take. So it's really a unique challenge. So I've been having a good time with it.
You know, the brilliant thing about only having, I've just played the demo levels that are up there, but it's really cool that that didn't even occur to me. In other words, the music felt just like well-written music, and the level just felt like a fun level to play, as opposed to, if something were less organically, if it was just like, oh, that run just is there to make it difficult to get around or something like that,
Okay.
So that's So I think you're accomplishing what you're setting out to
pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and regarding the music, we really want to try a variety of different songs. In the demo, one of them is kind of an 8-bit sort of homage, and the other one is sort of like a Russian circus waltz. And we got all sorts of different songs. There's actually one level called Thunder Creek that's actually has full vocals that'll be sung by us, and it's kind of a Western song, and it's just really fun to have songs with vocals in games, not necessarily licensed music, but actual songs written for the game, like in Conker, for instance.
Yeah.
I think Clay Fighter actually had an original song too. So.
Well, I gotta say that chiptune one, early Mega Man games is like the best music I've ever heard.
And okay, good, because I was kind of channeling that.
Yeah, the chiptune one reminded me of early Mega Man, so I was like, all right.
Good, good. That's what we were going for.
Sweet.
And so how many levels total are you planning? So you let me and Joe try a demo version, which had one level, and then one was a boss level. So right. How many levels and how many bosses? And like, how do you plan on structuring the game in that sense?
Well, I don't want to... speak too much about the number of levels yet, because that's still kind of up in the air and sort of dependent on how we do. It's something that, I'd like to put in as many levels as possible, obviously, but I really want each one to kind of have their own feel and, in some cases their own gimmick. But I can tell you that the bosses will be, right now the plan is to have two regular levels, then the third level be a boss level. So every three levels, the third one will be a boss level.
Okay. And so then the amount of, these level packs, or not that you're going to release them that way, but just these chunks of right. levels, these sets, that could obviously change, and you're not really sure yet.
Yeah, we kind of have a number in our mind, but I don't want to focus too much on that just yet because we're not entirely sure how many we'll be able to finish.
Right, absolutely. Okay.
Yeah.
And then do you plan on including multiplayer into this in any way? Is that even possible? Have you thought about it?
You know, we have definitely thought about multiplayer. We think it would be really cool. That's another thing that sort of depends on how we do in the Kickstarter because it's a concept that would require a lot of programming, so we'd have to, you know, get, you know, that, and that takes, you know, time and money, obviously. But there's several ideas that we have that we think would be really cool. There's one idea for co-op where, you know, you both control the tables at the same time, and maybe at one point you have to intersect them, like they have to both be on the same line to get certain bubbles, or they, you know, they have color-coded notes or bubbles that only one color can get. So you're sort of playing with, you know, your friend. The other concept was more of a counter-op thing where, like, say if it's on the Wii U, someone could place notes on the gamepad in real time while the player playing on the screen is dodging them. So that would be kind of a versus mode. So I think those would be really cool, but those are a little more hypotheticals right now, depending on how we do.
Yeah, well, hopefully you get there, because with the Wii U, one of the great things that I've been looking forward to since it's... unveiling was stuff like that, and there was that Rayman game, I think the one that just finally came out, where there was that level, it's not the whole game, but there's those levels where Rayman's running through and you actually do stuff kind of to time in time with the music, and and that concept's really cool. And then also it sounds like you're also kind of thinking about what Mario did with the kind of co-op where you could in the Mario game you're providing platforms for your other friend to use, but here you're kind of doing that to almost you know, obstruct them and everything.
Yeah, kind of trip them up. Right?
So that's great because some people use those platforms to trip people up. it won't be foreign to Wii U gamers.
Yeah, I like asymmetrical multiplayer. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, and it's something that I guess wasn't necessarily possible very easily in the past, but it's one of the great, if not the greatest, hope I have for the Wii U being a success is more of that. I mean, Nintendo Land, if it did anything right, it was showing that asymmetrical gameplay can be really, really engaging with the right people. So,
right.
So great, and that kind of alludes to my next question. What platforms are you aiming for?
Right now, the basic build is for PC and Mac, and we have a stretch goal for the Wii U, and I really want to develop for the Wii U because this is kind of... you know, if you listened to earlier, obviously I've always been a Nintendo fan, but the fact is, this has kind of always been my dream to have a video game playable on a Nintendo system. So I really would like to have, this game playable on the Wii U. I feel like the audience is there. You know, I have the Brawl in the Family audience already, and the game I feel is, you know, obviously inspired kind of by Nintendo's design principles, I think. You know, it's family friendly and it kind of has this arcadey concept that is easy to learn but difficult to master. So I really want PC, Mac, and Wii U. There's a possibility for more platforms, but those are kind of the focus right now.
And if you did manage to get it on Wii U, would you support off-TV play?
Yeah, definitely. I think off-TV play is great.
Yeah. I guess it wouldn't necessarily work in certain modes, of course.
Right, if there was a mode that required the gamepad to work separately, you know, that wouldn't... But I think that the basic game that we're developing right now could definitely work as an off-TV mode.
Right. And then what kind of control schemes, then, do you think you would support? Would you try to support, you know, the classic controller or the, you know, all those the different things? I mean, sideways controller. I know it's just a stretch goal at this point, but...
I'd like to, I mean, support pretty much any of the controllers. I think more options are generally a good thing when it comes to control. The game's controls themselves are pretty simple, so I don't know if there'd be really a need for you know, I don't know if people are necessarily going to really want to use Pro Controller or whatever, but I mean, you know, it'd be nice if the option was there.
Sure.
But yeah, the controls are just up, down, and one action button, so I think any controller would really be compatible with it.
Now, can you... You know, politicians, they make that one big promise that really kind of sells everything. Will you go on record and say that I will not use Waggle to to smack things because the tadpole can whip things. Can you promise no waggle?
I think I can go ahead and promise that right here. No waggle.
I think the Kickstarter just hit its goal.
There we go. Oh, nice.
I think it did for that. That should be your headline, actually. Tadpole treble, no waggle, bam.
No, not with no waggle, yes. Yeah, I know this is something that, I mean, related to that, we really want the hitting things mechanic to really be on the beat. So if there's any sort of slightly off feeling thing like that, that's something I've been kind of getting my brother to fix, because it's something that I really think is important. So yeah, waggle would be a little too unreliable for that mechanic. Yeah,
I appreciate that, because Rhythm Heaven Fever is one of those music rhythm games that I absolutely love. Never expected to love it, but I fell in love with that thing. We have a little love affair going on still. And I did eventually pick up the original Rhythm Heaven on the DS, and I like it, but the tapping, just relying on the stylus to hit the screen and hit it in the right way, just does not feel solid enough for me to really go all in for it, like a button press does. And a waggle or any other method besides a button press, I think would not that it can't be done, but I appreciate that you understand the importantness of you know, getting that spot on in a music game, which not that it sounds like you wouldn't, but to hear you say that reassures me.
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there's a reason that instruments are controlled with buttons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the trombone, I guess. The trombone uses waggle.
And the theremin, that's kind of...
Oh, the theremin does? Yeah. Okay, so if there's a theremin, we might have waggle.
I think you're giving waggle a little too much credit here, but... I don't think too many trombone players would call that waggle, but...
No, probably not, I guess.
Yeah.
Or slide whistle players.
Slide whistle players. Those professional slide whistlers.
So I guess one of the things that makes multiple platforms possible is I'm guessing, I mean, I want to get your answer on this, but the demo you provided us was made with the Unity web player. I had installed something. And when I checked it out on Wikipedia, you know, the end all for information and truthful information, correct information, that apparently is a platform that actually can be expanded to, like Xbox and probably the Nintendo and all these different things. Is that what you're going to stick with?
Wii U supports Unity as well. That's what's nice about Unity is actually it's good for indie devs because it's got kind of a nice, fairly easy to use interface, and you can do some pretty powerful stuff with it. So right now it's working for us, and I think we're just going to stick with that.
Cool. There's a bit of a debate in the gaming world about whether or not multiple save states are necessary, or user profiles, or how that works. And I know it depends on the platform totally. For the Wii U, I know that, you know, when you pretty much click on your own character and then that's kind of it. I mean, do you plan on having multiple save states or multiple save profiles within the game itself? Maybe to compare with friends locally, or like, you know, your spouse or something like that?
I mean, honestly, I really like the multiple save files. I just played Pikmin 3, and I was kind of... I mean, I liked the game a lot, but I was kind of disappointed you only had one save file, because then to restart it, you have to delete your old one or just start a new man entirely, like a new user, which kind of screws up your Miiverse posts and everything, you know? So for Tadpole Treble, we definitely are planning to have like at least 3 save files just kind of right there in the game itself, because, I don't know, that's kind of the standard... That's been the standard way to do it since... I mean,
Zelda
1 came out, yeah. So, I mean, I like that method, you know? I like restarting a game from scratch a lot of times and still keeping my old save.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. I got, you know, that first save slot is once it's beaten, it's sacred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if you're going to mess with it, like my nephew, if he's going to come over and play with it because everything's unlocked, he better not save. Like, we have to look in each other in the eye and have an understanding, you know? And actually, that's what bums me out, but I let it go with Lego City Undercover. I 100%ed that thing, and my time said, you know, 40-some hours or however long it was. And I was like, yes, okay, that's my definitive time. But he loves the game so much, and I can't let him just run amok elsewhere. I just have to let him run amok in that thing, which on the plus side, he has access to everything, but now I'm at, like, 60 hours.
And wow.
I mean, it's just a silly detail, but us gamers, you know, we...
Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah. I hear you. So, yeah, I think that's kind of the best way to do it, is having multiple save files. So I definitely want to do it like that.
Okay. Joe, you were bringing up something before the actual discussion here got started. Something about the 3DS. What did you want to bring up?
Oh yeah. Well, I was just wondering. I know you've only got these certain platforms in mind for right now, so we can even just speak conceptually about this. But this kind of game, I feel like you really need, you know, like you're using every bit of a wide screen for this. And so if I'm thinking, like, this is the kind of game I would love to have on the 3DS, if for no other reason than I don't have a Wii U yet.
Oh. So,
but as I was thinking about it, and that's more for money reasons than desire reasons, but but as I was thinking about this game on a 3DS, I was thinking, you know, is the 3DS screen too small, or is this something you think you could scale down and still have it be the same experience? I mean, I know you talked about the Wii U gamepad, but even that is a much larger viewing space than the 3DS or even the 3DS XL. So even just conceptually, do you think something like this would work on a handheld, or would it be obstacles?
I've thought about the 3DS because, I mean, like you alluded to, it does have a big install base. A lot of people have a 3DS and don't have a Wii U yet. I guess there is that trickiness. That's part of the reason why I'm kind of more focused on the Wii U is because, like you said, I think the characters are a little bit small. I think to make it that same sort of dimension to where you can see the same amount in ahead of you that you can on the standard version, you'd have to sort of crop the screen a little bit.
Right.
I'm not 100% sure if it would translate all that well to the 3DS. But I mean, I think it's possible. You know, it would require some experimentation. But I mean, it's definitely not out of the question or anything.
Right, because that was my issue with when I would play some of the like Game Boy Advance Sonic games. Is I felt they were very well made games, but that I couldn't see far enough ahead of me.
Yeah, the camera's kind of zoomed in a little more.
Get the speed with that planning. And your game obviously involves a lot of careful planning as you're seeing. Mm-hmm. The course layout in front of you. So,
well, right. Even one of the oldest examples of that I can think of is Metroid 2 for the Game Boy, and I mean that's notorious for having kind of a big Samus sprite.
Oh, but didn't it look so good though? It was so. I'm serious.
I haven't actually played it, so I can't speak to that
Samus
so much.
Looks in that game, so.
But still, you know, you can't see very well in front of you, and that's a slow-paced game in comparison to something like this, like Temple Trouble. So. If that was problematic in Metroid 2, obviously that would be tricky to work around. But
yeah, well, it's nice that the 3DS does have a wide screen, at least wider than the GBA and especially the Game Boy. But yeah, that would be something that we'd have to work around.
Yeah, Joe and I were speculating too. You could have you know the top of the water, because in the demo you were showing off some cool things where you do utilize the space outside above the surface a little bit and. If not just for flair in that particular level, but you know, that could be the top screen of the 3DS, and then the bottom stays water, and you could play with that a little bit.
Okay, that's kind of cool, because then you could jump out, you know, and you'll jump to the top screen for a moment or something.
Yeah, and you know, for who knows what? I mean, you're the master, but but we were just, you know, fantasizing about your game that's not even made yet, but we were just trying to think of good things for the sequel, I suppose.
All right.
People might already know these answers because, you know, by the time this does get edited and put out, your Kickstarter will begin. But how much are you hoping to earn as your base? And can you tell us about, you know, how that money will be used exactly? Yeah. And maybe afterwards tell us about stretch goals, if you have any.
Sure. Yeah. The base that we decided on is $30,000. And we got to that number when we kind of calculated all the fees that would go into this. The thing is, my brother and I are working on this game. You know, we each have our own jobs. So this game has kind of been a hobby for us for a long time. I, you know, of course, am a church pianist and I do Brawl in the Family. My brother Michael is a co-owner of a restaurant. And, so we both, you know, have these jobs going on. So what we want to do with this Kickstarter is be able to work more on the game. You know, be able to afford to work more in the game since I'm handling all the art and the music and he's handling a lot of the level design and reaching out to people. But the, $30,000, a big part of that's going to go towards our programmer who, we're going to need to hire, you know, full time for several months, probably 8 or 9 months, to really iron out all the framework of the game, especially since each level kind of has its own little thing. Like, for instance, we had to program the turtle snapping just for that one level. And one of the things to keep in mind is a Kickstarter. The initial goal, you know, if that's reached, they take out about 5 to 10% from Kickstarter fees and from Amazon credit card fees. So right off the bat, you lose I guess $2,000 to $3,000, I think. Other things that we kind of have to worry about are licensing fees with Nintendo, the cost of the dev kit. That's if we hit our stretch goal for the Wii U, though. But there's also, we're kind of hiring a marketing person to help us market the game for the duration of the Kickstarter. We are spending a little bit of money on the reward tiers and the merchandise for that. I'm also including the books as one of the reward tiers. So, I mean, that costs money. And, of course, the time involved just for us to spend on the game itself costs money. But short answer, most of that is going towards our programmer, and the rest of it is going towards fees and tier costs. And I mean, in all honesty, we are not going to be making a cent in terms of just like profit from this. It's more all going towards the game itself. And our stretch goals, we think 50,000 would be a really safe bet for the Wii U version. That way we can have the extra time for the programmer to learn the ins and outs of the Wii U version and rewrite the code that's required for that. And it would also, like I said, that, you know, we could afford the licensing cost and the dev kit cost for that. That's one of the stretch goals. One of the other stretch goals we have going on right now, I'm not sure exactly where it's placed just yet, but it's going to be a couple of different modes. One's called Concerto Mode, which is sort of a bonus mode after you beat the game. You can play through all the levels in a row on one life as sort of an extra challenge to see if you can, all levels together to see if, you know, it's an extra challenge to see if you can beat, you know, if you beat that, you get to unlock stuff. And we talked about multiplayer. That might actually be one of the stretch goals if we can hit it. You know, I think that'd be a really great thing to include. There's also been talk of there's, depending on how much we raise, we can be able to afford to put in more levels into the game. So that's one of the other things that we want to focus on is more levels, more bosses, make the value of the game itself go up. And since the game itself is just going to cost $7 on you know, as a reward tier, and that's the planning cost once it goes for sale, you know, that's a really good value if we can hit those stretch goals and make the game have more and more features.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the more people that you know, help support you, the more value they're getting out of that $7 if that's what they chose to mm-hmm. do. So that's pretty good. That's more incentive to share with your friends, everybody.
Yeah, and I mean, like $7, that's like a cost of a fast food meal, you know?
Yeah, geez.
That's nothing.
If that, the Temple these days.
Is like better for your heart and stuff.
That's true. So, and it's better for your brain.
Yeah, good for your brain.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's great. I'm really looking forward to just seeing it all laid out, obviously, in the next couple of days. When, again, this is going to be afterwards, but you're putting this up when next week?
Right? Tuesday.
Tuesday, that's right. Magic Tuesday. Tadpole Treble Tuesday.
Tadpole Tuesday. That's nice. I like it.
Yeah. that could be the sequel's name, too.
Tadpole Tuesday.
With a digit? Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nice.
okay, so wonderful. I guess, Joe, do you have any other questions to ask about the Kickstarter or the game?
Not really. I guess just, no, this is not like a real question at all. It's just a comment that has nothing to do with anything, but that is that turtles and frogs are two of my favorite creatures.
Nice.
And having only played but one level and one boss, you have managed to put both into your game.
Well, great. So I really like turtles and frogs too.
So they're good choice. Nice. And I guess I'm wondering now if when you beat the game, does the tadpole stumble into some radioactive waste under a house with a tank and maybe grow large size and then run off and have to be rescued? Is that maybe where this game's like, going? Or
is that like a prequel to Blaster Master or something?
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah. hadn't thought of it.
That'll be the sequel, Blaster Master, Tadpole Trouble 2. it's a good idea. I'm going to say that's a secret for now, you know? Spoiler.
That could be a secret stretch goal.
Can't say anything. Mm-hmm. Secret stretch goal. Nice.
But no, I'm excited, and it's great to hear that you know, you're using like the influences of, I mean, freaking you know, Elite Beat Agents as for the cutscenes between the levels, and as I already identified, you've got like the Mega Man influence on the music, which is an amazing choice. And I feel like even this genre of the gameplay mechanics is unique and has not really been tapped into all that much. And to have someone who is as equally passionate about music as they are about art and games, I think that's in pretty good hands. I think it's pretty exciting.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I really want to you know, make this as good as it can be. And I was a little worried when, like, you know, Harmonite was announced, for instance, because it was, you know, it's kind of a music based game, you know, a kind of a runner game, you know, by the makers of Pokemon. So it's like, oh man, but fortunately it ended up being pretty different than Tadpole Trouble in concept. So I definitely think this this idea is still a unique one that hasn't really been done before.
Yeah, I mean, I my brain tends to look at any new game, especially ones on Kickstarter, and say, you know, what's that like? What's it remind me of? And I see little bits of Bit Trip Runner and Tadpole Trouble. I see little bits almost of Guitar Hero. But you seem to take these little elements and you really do something different with them. And just playing the demo that I've been so lucky to have done, it feels different. It doesn't feel like I'm playing something that I've played before.
Yeah, okay, and I will say, I mean, I played the Harmonite demo. I played all of Elite Beat Agents and Guitar Hero. And like I play you know, a number of musical instruments, and I never felt quite comfortable. I think Elite Beat Agents was the closest, but any of those, like especially like Harmonite, I played the demo and I was just like, ah, I'm not really clicking with this. Mm. The first time through the demo level for Tadpole Trouble, I mean, I felt like the input I was giving was registering on the screen as I wanted.
Okay, great.
So you know, I don't know. It seems like it should be such a staple of any such game, but it's apparently difficult to get right. And even Bit Trip Runner, I mean, my goodness, I forgot to mention that, but yeah, that was when I was so excited for that game, and it was purely because I just the rhythm of it was not quite clicking with me. And it was one of those things where at some point I start feeling like there's no more that I can learn. There's something a little off in the mechanics. But even just playing your game a few times, I mean, I had no such problems, I should say. So,
well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's something that's important for me to hear, because I really want it to be intuitive and to fit with the music, because I mean that's really the most important part, is to really feel like you're part of the song. And I mean, I this isn't really related to that, but I kind of want to also make sure the game feels you know, pretty beefy. You know, I mean, we're a small development studio, but I'm kind of thinking of various ideas for replay and stuff. There's kind of going to be a very rudimentary like currency system. You know, we can get extra life pieces and things. And there's going to be kind of a unique challenge for each level as well that players will go back and try to accomplish, so they can unlock like some sort of secret last thing, you know. So we're trying to focus on that too, to make it replayable.
Now, going back a little bit, let me just make this observation that I made when I first played the demo. While we have made references to these other games that are, I guess, similar in terms of at least that they're music games, they're rhythm games, and that's what Tadpole Trouble is to some degree. It's a rhythm game. But what's great about it, and I think it's a little freeing that isn't in, and well, Bit Trip Runner is one of my favorite games, the original. I like the second one, but the original is one of my favorite games on the system, on the Wii. It had great music, it had, you know, fun gameplay, etc. But it was, you had to be perfect. And not in the sense of like skill, but you only had one option. At every single junction, you had one option. Tadpole Treble, instantly, you're thrown in there, and I'm thinking, okay, I gotta make sure I hit this bubble, okay, I gotta do this. It felt all very, okay, yeah, I've gotta do this correctly, but then I missed the bubble. For the first time, I was like, oh, shoot. And I was like, well, wait a sec. The world's not over. I have a life bar. Okay, I see that. I actually was able to choose my own path through the level while still being on that musical rhythm and the beat. So it's weird that I've never really played a music rhythm game before, where I actually had some sort of ability to improvise and do my own thing while also playing under the rules and laws of physics that the world presents to me. So it was kind of a cool freeing experience for a rhythm game.
It is true that most rhythm games, now that you mention that, they have like very sort of rigid, you know, like when you're not moving, you're in, or when you're not controlling how you move, you sort of naturally rest into one of these, you know, preset sort of spots or
whatever. The whole Bit Trip series does that.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But this game actually has a very, I don't know if more analog is the right word, but, you know, there's like a whole spectrum of, you know, it's just however up or down you feel like being at that point on the screen, that's up to you. You know, you have full control over that. It's not like say, like you could have designed the game to have you stop at like the different lines on the music notes or something like that, but mm-hmm. no, you have that full range of control for those spaces in between, which is rather unique.
I'm glad you guys said that, because when I first made the game last year, when I had the old demo, I don't know if y'all played the original demo or not, but we kind of redid it from scratch. The notes weren't spiky, so a lot of people swam into the notes at first and took damage, and took them a little while to understand they had to dodge the notes. And afterward, they would inevitably ask me, "Why don't you get the notes in the game? You know, why can't you catch the notes instead of dodging them?" And I always felt that I wanted to have the player have a little more freedom than that, because if you got the notes and that was it, you know, there'd really be one path, one perfect path through the level. And I kind of didn't really want to do that. I wanted a little more freedom. So we have the notes now, but we also added bubbles. So there's still things that you can get on occasion that keeps the player alert. But you know, there's still that greater degree of freedom that the player has. So I'm glad that that kind of stands out to you guys for the game, the way it controls.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't think about the why not get the notes part, but yeah, that sort of inherently gives you so much more freedom.
Right. Well, the other issue that would have is if you, I mean, it would really limit the note placement. You know, you couldn't have one that goes dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. You know, you can't have a low note, then a high note, because you wouldn't be able to reach it in time.
Right.
Yeah, see, I just figured you guys were all noted out from Banjo-Kazooie. That was my take on it, but I guess I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You know, can I...
You get a lot of notes in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Practical question that I just missed. There's times when there's little like pink sparkly bits.
Yes.
Okay. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
What do those do? I'm not sure what those are supposed to accomplish.
Yeah, we didn't. I think we should probably mention that in the demo. We're still ironing out the demo, but
of course. Yeah.
The idea is that the bubbles are sort of the currency. So it records your high score for the bubbles that you catch in the level. And if you go through the level again, all the bubbles will be back. But if you beat your high score, that high score will become your new bubble total. The sparkly stuff is very simple though. It's just a bonus area that gives you more points. Okay.
Gotcha.
So yeah. So you want to aim for those whenever you get more points. And we try to have spots where like, you know, half of it, the screen will have the sparkly thing, and the other half will have food. So if you're good and you have full life, you can go for the bonus area and get extra points. While if you're low on life, you know, you'll forego those extra points and get more food to fill up your life instead.
I like that.
So mm-hmm. as the demo did show us, a lot of it has to do with life. So instead of, again, with the strict path of previous rhythm games in on consoles and everything, if you miss a note, then that kind of ends your life and you start over or whatever. Here, if you miss something, more like Guitar Hero, where if you miss a note, you just keep going and you just take a hit or whatever. Are you still going to have some sort of minimum bubble limit?
Can you beat the level?
Can you fail a level besides life?
That's an interesting question, actually. I think that idea has merit. I'm not sure... I guess that's something I'd have to kind of reflect on for a bit, because I'm not sure if that would enhance the experience or make it frustrating.
Oh, and I couldn't tell you either. I agree that there are some, like, how it is, I mean, there's, now.
There's a good and bad side to both things, I think.
Well, like DDR or Stepmania or whatever, the computer version of DDR, which was, mm-hmm. DDR was the first rhythm game I ever played, you know? And I loved it, but man, I loved it when I got it on the computer, because I could play it, you know, even with my fingers, it was still fun, you know.
Yeah.
Just as kind of a precursor to rhythm games that I would come to know later. But I just hated when I would fail. I would change the settings eventually when I learned that I could do that. I would change the settings to just no fail. Yeah, my points wouldn't be that great, but I wanted to be able to experience the whole level and just kind of keep going. And when a game stops you, when you've hit, you know, say if you were to miss too many bubbles or in some other game you, for some reason, fail it, when you stop there, you never get to see what's after it, and you never get to kind of play the whole thing as one piece and then see where your weakness is.
Yeah.
And as a whole level or a whole unit. And I think that's kind of not unfair, but just unfortunate, because it just limits your scope of experience with the game.
Right. You know, now that I think about it, like, we did want to appeal to a wide variety of people, you know. I feel that the game itself, we want to kind of have it fairly challenging to get through a level on its own, so that beating the level would feel like an accomplishment, and you wouldn't have to have a secondary goal. Because I think the other part of that is from a narrative standpoint, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I mean, the game doesn't have an in-depth, like a really in-depth story or anything, but I feel like, you know, if Bataan's trying to get home, if she makes it through this dangerous area, that should be enough. You know, what stops her from continuing onward if she doesn't have enough bubbles, I guess.
Sure.
So we probably won't have that as a limit.
Okay. Unless Joe has more to say, unless you have more to say, just a few other general questions, and then we'll kind of wrap this up. So I saw that you commented on your website that Tuesday was going to be the start of, it'll be the first day of the rest of your life, possibly. And then, you know, there's a lot of pressure you're putting on yourself, obviously, you know, to get this out and to do what you want to do. This is your passion. Kind of ignoring this for a second, what are your hopes for the future in general? If this does well, do you want to continue making games as a career, or like trying to give us anything that you can say? I mean, life is so random. We don't really know what's coming, but
I mean, that's really what it's about. I love doing Brawl in the Family, but it's not something I can do forever. You know, I feel like eventually I'm going to want to make my own. Not that it's not my own, but make something that, a character and a world and a universe of my own. And it really ties back into video games. It's something I've always really wanted to do, was designed for video games. And so if Tadpole Trouble does well, I feel like I'll have cleared a really big hurdle, and that I'll have something to show for it. I'll have a video game to show for it that's playable, you know, that could be on my resume. And it means, you know, what's to stop me from making more video games. So I am kind of putting a lot of emphasis on this Kickstarter, because I feel like this could be the very first step for me as a game developer and in branching forward and moving into like that passion that I've always really wanted to do. So this is kind of a huge milestone for me personally.
And that's why I wanted you on, frankly, you're a negative worlder like us, and we really appreciate your contribution to the website, and just you're a friend of ours. But I wanted people to get to know you a little bit better and get to know the project, because it's really easy to look at a Kickstarter and just see a game and then think, well, do I want to pay for it? Okay. Like Mighty No. 9, you know, that just rocketed, you know, with its whole thing.
And everyone, yeah, that was so crazy.
And everyone who, you know, kind of went with it, or at least the discussions we had on the forums, it was more like, well, is it worth me buying the game now? Like, it was all about the game. Because obviously, what is it, Inafune? Obviously, he's had an established career. Like, no one's thinking about if he's going to be crying at night because he didn't get, you know, he's going to be fine. It's the game, whether or not we want it. But here, I mean, yes, you want to have a good product. That's what you want to make. That's what we want to receive. That's what we want to play. But, you know, when you're hopefully submitting to this Kickstarter, everyone out there listening, you're not just, you know, paying $7 for a game that might come out. You're also kind of supporting possibly a friend, or possibly just someone you respect. You're supporting their dream. And frankly, I think that's one of the great things about Kickstarter, is you give people that opportunity who may not have a way otherwise. And it's kind of a community support thing, which, I mean, I live in a world or a mindset where a supportive community is a good community. And instead of us all thinking about ourselves, it's kind of nice to think about our neighbor.
Yeah, well, thank you. Very eloquently put.
Okay, well, then my last question that I got for you is when this Kickstarter does pass, because we all have confidence in you and in the project, when it's passed, you're working on the game, are you going to come back and discuss development with us?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. I'm mainly doing the art and music and sort of design side of things, so I won't be able to answer too many technical things, but I'd be happy to let you know about all the sorts of hurdles we've had to overcome and things that that worked out nicely and things that may have been difficult.
You won't just forget about us and insist on Jeff Keighley?
I will never. Jeff Keighley. Man, no, I will never forget about Negative World, man. It's the best message board with the best users.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. No kidding, man.
Hopefully. I love Negative World. Hopefully, if you come back and talk about the game with us, you can bring your programmer and your brother and other people.
Oh, yeah.
We could have a whole a blowout just to hear how it's going. We'd love
an update.
Happy
to discuss, I'm sure.
Yeah, so no last comment, Joe. Anything else?
Buy Tadpole Treble. Support Kickstarter.
Yes, thank you, please.
I had a last comment. There you go.
And, and my last comment's going to be the same thing, ditto. But also, again, I don't know what all the stretch goals are, but I can imagine that if there's any sort of art or paraphernalia like that, just based on his Brawl in the Family store and everything that's there, you can guarantee you're going to get some quality stuff there. So it's going to it'll pay off to go higher than the base game, I think.
Yeah, so I encourage we're definitely trying to make that enticing. I'm working on a digital soundtrack is going to be right above that. And
nice.
One of the things I want to do is a digital travel guide, which is kind of like a manual, but it's more in depth. It's going to have all the levels. It's like the really good old school instruction manuals where you have the creatures and you have little bios before them. And each level will be written out like you're visiting there. It's come visit Scenic Turtle Pipes. I'll have a picture of the turtle and it'll have art, and I really want to make it a really nice kind of companion to the game. So that's a couple of the smaller rewards, for instance, for the tiers.
Great. That sounds really cool.
Would you have at least one part of the manual written by a translation team that knows nothing about the original?
That's a pretty good idea. I might consider doing that.
Some intentionally mistranslated enemy names or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you could do what the NES a lot of NES games did, where the art in the manual look nothing like the game itself.
Yeah, it's all westernized. It's pretty good.
So, Matthew, do you have anything else you want to add, or have we gone through it all?
I'm just happy to be a part of this podcast. Thank you guys so much for having me on, and please support Tadpole Treble and or spread the word, because this is the dream that I've always wanted to achieve.
Absolutely, brother.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, thank you.
So that wraps up another episode of the Negative World Podcast. We'd like you to comment on what you've heard, as well as submit to the Kickstarter. But you can comment on what you've heard on negativeworld.org. You just got to find the thread associated to the episode. And hell, find Triforce Bun on there and chat him up and encourage him and give him some words and tell him that you submitted to his... that's not the right word, submitted. Contributed. I don't know what the hell I'm
submit
saying.
Submit to me.
Submit to the Kickstarter.
Contributed is a much better word.
I admit, I've got some funky word choices sometimes. Anyway. So find him, find the thread. Let's chat about this. If you don't want to subscribe to Negative World, though, you can reach us at the Facebook page. You just got to search for negativeworld.org. Or you can follow us on Twitter @negative_world. Please remember to listen to the subscribe to the Enhanced podcast if you're into that kind of thing. And thank you. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you both. This is awesome.
It's been great. Yeah, it's been great talking to you, man.
All right. Yeah, nice talking to y'all, too.
Yeah, you guys have a wonderful night, and Matthew, good luck.
All right,
good luck,
thank
buddy.
You.
See you later.
Bye-bye.